Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Tweet at Miriam O'Cal. Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Well, my next guest this morning, well, he's been called one of the inventors of Britpop through his setting up of Creation Records. Alan McGee went from being a ticket inspector for British Rail to signing and launching Oasis, along with Primal Scream, Teenage Fan Club and the Jesus and Mary chain. Now the film Creation Stories tells how this young Glaswegian rose to the point to changing British culture in the late 80s and early 90s. And I'm delighted to say he joins me now. Alan McGee, good morning.
Hello. Thanks. How are you?
Very good. Thanks so much for joining us. Listen, the film Creation Stories, I gather it's adapted from your own memoir, your 2013 one, but you said modestly it's an Irvine Welsh film. He wrote the script to this and to Trainspotting, and you just happened to be in it.
It's kind of true. Irvine's amazing. He's one of my oldest friends in London. You know, I've been like friends with Irvine since before he was famous. Do you know what I mean? Since about 91. When he showed up and I put out Screamadelica for Bobby and Andrew, you know, Irvine was around then, and I used to party with him at the Sub Club and get up to a lot of naughty stuff in the early 90s, and we remained friends, you know. And then I sent him the book about 2013. He loved it and said we should make a movie. And then Irvine's a connecting factor, Miriam, and the whole thing. He brought in Ewan Bremner, although he offered me Ewan McGregor initially, and I was like, I don't know, even know if you know what I look like, Miriam, but I don't look like Ewan McGregor. I look Scottish, he looks Swedish, and it was just, I was looking at Ewan McGregor, and I'm like, I look like this, right? I look like as if I come from Glasgow. It's like, Ewan McGregor is this big, spelt, sexy guy. I do not look like that. So we got Spud, Ewan Bremner, who wanted to do it, and he's a brilliant actor. And I actually think we did the right thing because his portrayal of me is brilliant. And then, yeah, he loved the Joe Meek movie that Nick Moran made. And I was like, I've never liked any of these Cockney things. I can't stand that whole thing, you know, like cheeky Cockneys. And I really didn't want to do that. But when I met Nick Moran, I realised he's not really one of them. He's actually a proper artist. So I bought into it, and thank God I did, because he did a really great job in the film. And then at the right point, he also got me Richard Jobson to play my dad, who, apart from Ewan Bremner, is a star guy. He's Richard Jobson of the Skids. It's his first proper film, and he just nails that character that's supposedly my father. Really, really close, I think. And then at the right point, they brought in Danny Boyle, and then three different people, three big companies offered to fund the film, and it got made. And then at that point, you're still thinking, it's not going to be... I mean, I'm shocked it's doing as well as it did, to be absolutely honest. I thought it would come out, it'd be big, not big, people would notice it for one or two days, it'd go away, and that would be, I could go on with my life. It was kind of not really working out like that. It was the biggest film in the UK that weekend it came out, or that week it came out, and there's been a bidding war. It's just been signed to a big company in America, but there's a bidding war in America. It's literally coming out in about 30 countries now. So I never thought it would be successful, but it seems to be, you know.
It's such a good story, though. I mean, before we get to the signing of Oasis and all the other stuff you did, tell my listeners a little about your own background. I mean, you mentioned your dad being played. You grew up and you started out in Govan Hill, was it, in Glasgow?
Yeah, I was in Govan Hill for 5 years, Miriam. It wasn't as rough as it is now. It's rough now, but it wasn't rough then. It was all right. And then I moved up to Qatar, and I ran into Bobby, who's my oldest mate.
Bobby Gillespie.
He moved into Springburn when he was 10 and 11. We became pals. But football pals, really, not music pals. And then I get into music. I'm about 9 months older than him. And he went, I'll take me to see Thin Lizzy. And that was how we all started, you know. So at 13, Bobby, 14, me, I took him to a Thin Lizzy gig. Because I'd been going to gigs for 2 or 3 years before that. So I literally saw... Because my mum and dad were loose with me, they weren't loose with my sisters, they were loose with me, or come back, as long as you get back before 11 o'clock. So I was going to gigs at the Greens Playhouse when I was 11, saw T-Rex, saw David Bowie, saw Roxy, saw Gary Glitter, saw Ronnie Lane, Slim Chance, saw in later years Queen, Santana, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Steve Gibbons Band, Focus, David Essex, Sweet, you know, Alvin Stardust. I saw them all, man, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then you started, as well as going to London, you were a bass player yourself. You had The Laughing Apple, wasn't it, one of the bands? Why didn't you stay being an artist yourself?
I was a chancer. I couldn't play. Not really. You know, I mean, I was a punk bass player. You know what I mean? Most of these punk bass players can barely play. Literally, I could probably teach you the bass and you could probably play a show in my old band. You know what I mean? And I was lucky. Again, I ran into a brilliant, brilliant guy called Andrew Innes. He's the guitar player, songwriter in Primal Scream. Writes all the music with Bobby. And I was in his band. And then eventually, when Primal Scream needed a guitar player, I put Andrew Innes in Primal Scream. And that's how that whole thing came about. But because Andrew taught me to play bass, Miriam. It's one string. You'd have to be a bit of an idiot not to be able to just about pull it off. And I can just about pull it off, you know what I mean?
How and why did you decide to set up Creation Records? I mean, it was an inspired decision, as we can now know, but why did you do that and how did you do that? Because it wasn't long before that you were actually just working as a ticket inspector or collector of British Rail.
I suppose I'll even, sounds pretentious, and I'm not really a pretentious person, but I probably believed in the romance of rock and roll, and I wanted to put records out. I really believed in punk, still believe in punk, to be honest, and I put out these records. But I didn't expect it to be successful again. I put them out, and then the first 11 kind of failed. You know, nothing sold. And although it didn't fail for me, because I don't really judge my life on sales, I was enjoying it, but I was thinking, there's going to be a point that somebody goes, you know, through the distributor, or you owe us 20 grand, you're now officially bankrupt. I was expecting that about 18 months in. And I signed this band, Jesus and Mary Chain, found them out of nowhere, put it out. A week later, I sold 50,000 singles, and they were in the lower tiers of the charts in these days. They were in the top 75. And I was like, right, Christ, well, it's on. Do you know what I mean? And that's what happened, you know.
And I assume Screamadelica, Primal Scream, you mentioned it earlier, was that a huge turning point as well?
I'd say Loaded was a huge turning point. I'd say Acid House was. The punk thing was incredible. But I was a tiny wee bit young to be effective, I think is the best word for it. I was just a 15-year-old punk fan. Me and Bobby would go to the shows. We met Gen X, we met The Clash, we met Weller, we met all these bands that we had idolised. But we weren't really part of it as people, as a manager and a musician, like, you know, what we ended up doing. It was like, we were just fans going to the gigs, and it was great, but we weren't really effective. We weren't really doing that much. And then Acid House came round. I get into it about tail end of 87, beginning of 88. I turned Bob and the Valentines and House of Love and all these people, took them to Shoom and Future, got everybody into it. And then we met Andy Weatherall, and that was the beginning of it, really, to be honest. That was the beginning of that break becoming commercial, because basically it was rock bands with beats become pop, and that's kind of what happened, you know.
Now, you've told this story a lot, but a lot of people in Ireland might not know it. Tell about how you first saw and how you signed Oasis.
Well, number one, I can't believe Andy doesn't actually kind of know the story now, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like, everybody does know the story. But look, I just wandered into King Tut's Wawa Hut. I was chasing a girl. In the film, I'm missing a train. There was no train. I was just chasing a girl.
Debbie Turner.
And went on up. I think we were talking that particular little period. And I went on up, freaking out, but also probably let her know that I was interested. And she had brought along Oasis. And I didn't know she shared the room with them, but she did. She brought them along. I'd never met them before. And that was it. Do you know what I mean? You know, I saw them. Liam looked amazing. Looks like George Best in a Man City blue tracksuit, and I just thought, you are too good looking to be the singer or in the band, you'll be the drug dealer. Because that's usually what used to happen, you know. The drug dealers in the early 90s were better looking than people in the band, you know. And And so I thought, well, he'll be the drug dealer. And then I looked at Bonehead and I went, I bet you're the singer. Do you know what I mean? But it wasn't. It was textbook. I mean, like, Liam was the singer and they looked great. And Noel had it right down. The band were amazing, you know.
Did you know, had you any idea how successful they would be? Because, I mean, you had the reputation, Alan, and the track record of signing and working with indie bands. Like, so for you to go with Oasis, some might say, you know, they didn't really fit with your previous mould.
I agree with you. I don't think I really had a clue. I just thought they were a good band. I definitely did not think they were superstars. I just thought they were a good band. They could play well. But you don't, I went, oh, do you want a record deal? But I didn't know what was beneath the bonnet. Do you know what I mean? They could have been cycles for all I knew. I just didn't know, you know. And I got to know them. And then after you meet them a few times, you realise, God, they need it. Yeah. So really.
I read, actually, think in The Observer, that it wasn't really you, Alan, who initiated the huge rivalry, such as it was, between Oasis and Blur in the 90s. It was more Blur's manager, Andy Ross, but that you, yeah. Oasis, well, and Creation Records, you did well out of it.
He wasn't their manager. I think he was a record label. I wasn't the Oasis manager. I was the record label and the publisher. I think Andy did initiate it. I think Andy, if he actually got him in a quieter moment, he'd probably admit to it. But I think I've got the blame, and that suits Andy. So fair enough, I've got the blame, but it wasn't me. You know, I mean, we felt pushed. I would have moved it again, but Noel was like, no, we're going with this. You know what he's like, so... So we went to war and we won. Unbelievably, you know.
Absolutely. And when you look at your career, Alan, do you feel you're lucky now? Because there was a lot of drink, there was a lot of drugs way back when. I know you gave it up yourself after you had a bit of a breakdown. But it was a very tricky time. When you look back now, do you feel blessed that you survived it all?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm still doing music. You know, yesterday I just spent a day in the park with Darren Emerson, the guy who did Born Slippy, with James, with Las Vegas. We're going to do a mix of the track at the end of the film. And it's like, I mean, I'm 60 and I'm still don't have a real job. It's great, you know.
And in the film, I love the stuff as well. There are some Tony Blair scenes. Were they more Irvine Welsh than you? I mean, your character does a rant about Blair in the film. Was that you?
Yeah. No, but I actually like him for what it's worth, and I still know him. Although, actually, if I was being honest, I'm a bit embarrassed that he gets it in the neck just as bad. But it's what it is. It's Irvine's, look, Irvine hates him. I don't. I quite like him. But at the end of the day, I just let Irvine. The only two bits, Miriam, I changed in the film were there were two really, really funny digs at my ex-wife. But I just thought, she ain't going to get the joke, mate. You're going to have to take it out. And I said to Irvine, you're going to end up getting me annihilated by... the kid's mum. You've got to take that out, you know. And he did.
Fair enough. Listen, Alan, it's a really great film. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. Congrats on all your success. Brilliant. And Creation Story is available for all to watch from Sky Cinema now. We're going to have a listen now to Wonderwall.